Well, hello everybody, and welcome again to Tea with Louise from the Weirdly Cosmic podcast. And it's my great pleasure to have Melanie Reinhardt here with me again today to talk over a few things. Well, it was actually one of my clients noticed something about Chiron. Chiron in Aries is exactly conjunct the upcoming eclipse. I knew that. It's exact to the minute. But Chiron was also at this same degree, 19 Aries, when the nodes moved back into Aries and Libra, and will be at 19 Aries when the nodes leave Aries and Libra and move back into Virgo and Pisces. So this degree is just like kind of just off the charts. So I had to ask Melanie if she could come and talk to me again, and luckily she was free, so we arranged it really quickly. But if you've not met Melanie before, I'd be surprised. But if you haven't, she literally wrote the book on Chiron. So talking of tattered books, Melanie, this one's a little bit more, a little bit more battered and things. So Chiron and the Healing Journey. And that title itself is very relevant to what we're going to talk about today. So thank you for joining me, Melanie. And I think we're going to start with reading the Sabian symbol. I'm going to get Melanie to read it for this eclipse degree, for this degree that is so important for Chiron's journey through Aries.
Yes, indeed. And I just want to start by saying, this book, look at mine, it's absolutely falling. It's been out of print for a really long time. And very recently, it's just come back into print with Raven Dreams Press. You can get it in your usual bookstores or online at Amazon and so forth. Absolutely wonderful timing. And just to say, in Dane Rudyard's way of working with the degrees, a part of a degree, so usually you'll see a planet in, let's say, 5 degrees in 50 minutes. So the 50 minutes is counted as a whole degree because the thought is that it's already entered that field of that degree. And so it's Aries 20 that I'll be reading from. And the symbol, as described by Rudyard, is a young girl feeding birds in winter. And his keynote right underneath that is overcoming crises through compassion. And the keynote at the end of the write-up that he did is the transmutation of life into love. So he refers to natural seasonal rhythms, also imply an oscillation between living and dying. But through creative imagination, we can fly over the cycle and discover the means not only to escape from the fatality of seasonal decay or deprivation, but to assist other living beings to survive through crises. And he also says, he refers specifically to emotional crises as well, and encouraging the creation of partnerships with other creatures unable to escape wintry deprivation or death. And through this, the life of the spirit, which is symbolized by birds, can be maintained through all crises if, and that's in italics, if, like a young girl, we are widely open to the promptings of love and sympathy. Interesting. He also mentions a seasonal phase of impotency, like winter coming on. We can't like turn it off and wind back the clock. And there is a certain feeling of potential helplessness in that. And he says life potency in nature reaches a higher level in the human being, meaning that we can encompass the opposites of living and dying. And yeah, mentioning specifically emotional crises as well. So I just thought that was such a beautiful symbol for such an interesting and potent point coming up very shortly,
Oh, it really is, and I love that it's a young girl as well, because I always think of Aries as almost like the young child, the toddler kind of thing. When we are the young child, it's that new beginning, that sense of freshness and rebirth,
and also the sense of innocence. I've always felt there is something very innocent about Aries. And I mean, just as a field, a sign
it
within
is
the zodiac, something new and innocent, and that's sort of complemented by the fact that Aries is, of course, ruled by Mars, who is the warrior god. So there is a certain sense of becoming embattled that develops in Aries, and yet there's something so fresh and innocent and straightforward about the energy itself. I'm
It
just
really
thinking
is.
of numerous friends that I have or have had who have the sun in Aries. And in some of the old constellational books depict Aries as a lamb.
Yes, they do, don't they? Not the ram.
Not the ram,
It's
but
the
the
young.
lamb. And a very cute looking, innocent little lamb at that, and attached to that image is the sense of the devotional energy that's very strong in Aries. And often it's that kind of energy that can get the show on the road,
Yes.
That forward looking, almost visionary energy, and being able to take action on it. So Aries,
I kind of always think of Aries almost as like, I know exactly what I want and I'm just going to go for it kind of thing.
Exactly.
This, yeah. Such
Sort of
clarity.
sort of never mind the fallout,
Yes.
And also, Aries is not really a sign that cares too much about completing something and achieving,
No, they
it's
do
the
not.
initial impulse. And so, what I'm feeling just as I'm talking is, the energy around that eclipse time, and wherever you're located, it might be worth looking up how the eclipse travels in relation to where you'll be located, and the hours where it might be visible. And there, I have to say, don't look at the sun without appropriate protection. You can get proper eclipse glasses in numerous places. You're sure to find them online. So don't
You
do
can
that.
You can take them off when the sun is completely covered, and that's quite astounding. Yeah.
It is quite astounding.
Yeah.
So
I'm
it's
actually
mainly...
traveling to see it. I'm traveling to Texas to see it.
Oh, wonderful. I was just going to say this line of visibility, it's mainly located in America, North America, and the place it sort of makes landfall on the East Coast, northeast coast, and then kind of sweeps down the down the East Coast, and then moves across. And You don't have to be right under the eclipse line of visibility to feel the
Nope, you
effect of
do
it.
not.
You really don't. And so, you know, the whole process lasts for several hours, but typically the point of exactitude is very short.
This one's quite long. I think
Yes, I was just
it's like
going to say.
4 minutes.
And so, but you can tune in, oh, a good couple of hours beforehand. And, you know, and that is wherever you are in the world. And there is a marvelous website called timeanddate.com. That's
Oh,
all one
amazing.
together. And it's got an amazing website too. But it's got a whole section on eclipses. And typically they live stream every eclipse. So if you're a very visual person and you want to really track it, they'll probably start the live stream at least. They usually start it, you know, a couple of hours before. And they have their team of photographers all over the world, you know. So you can see the entire thing from several viewpoints sometimes, and it's a wonderful website.
And I think it also it tells you, if you're like me, living in North America, then it shows, where you'll see partial as well if you're
Exactly.
under
And
it.
they have maps. Yes, maps.
But Melanie's right. This eclipse, the more I kind of tune into the energy of it is not only is it in Aries, which is the first sign, and we've talked about that energy of Aries, the new beginnings.
Yes.
It's at 19 degrees, which, as I've mentioned, was where Chiron was when the nodes moved into Aries. So an eclipse, by the way, is a new or full moon that's on the nodes. I won't explain all of the astronomy, but that's basically why what makes it an eclipse, because it's conjunct the moon's nodes. And so
Yes.
that, but 19 is a one, so that's a new beginning. So it's the first sign at a one, new beginnings. There's also 19 is in numerology is a one and a nine. So beginnings and endings of cycles.
Yes, and you know, the cycle of eclipses is 19 years. So that's another thing that if you're interested in sort of tracking things, as I certainly am, that you can look back 19 years and it'll be almost to the day. You'll find another eclipse in almost the same place. And you can go back even another 19 years and you'll see that. So eclipses are not solitary phenomenon in any way. They have a cycle like everything in astrology does, really. And that's another very interesting thing. So let's just do the maths.
It's two
2004,
2005.
yeah, 2005, yeah.
But that one did not have Chiron conjunct.
Exactly. No, it didn't fit. And the other thing that I'm very interested in, have been for years, is, you know, this transition from Chiron in Pisces to Chiron in Aries. I mean, it really is world shaking. If you look back to previous transits of Chiron in Pisces, just in the 20th century. So many of you listening might be old enough to remember the transit of Chiron through Pisces in the 1960s. And that was at, let me just look up my notes here. Yeah, that was at 23-ish of Pisces, on the 13th of April 1966. So it'll be about 4 years before we have another one of those conjunctions. But what seems incredibly interesting to me is, you know, of course, the 1960s, as a whole, you know, it's kind of thought of as the age of flower power and make love, not war, and all these things, which are
Oh,
so
60.
Sorry?
66. 66 was quite different, really, wasn't it?
Well,
As
exactly.
I
That
remember.
was the shift. And then there's a whole sequence of major events, which, you know, just scanning over them. And of course, considering them as manifestation in the collective of how the energies were turning at that time. You know, so the 60s began with, you know, the Beatles and the age of flower power and all of that. Then came Chiron Saturn in Pisces, 1966. And then the rest of the 60s, Chiron went into Aries in April of 1968, first time. And then all the major sort of epoch-making events that followed after that were almost like the crash landing of all of that optimism and hope and idealism and expansion and opening on all sorts of levels. It was like a progressive crash landing of that. And of course, that was also the decade of the first moon landing.
Of course,
And
yeah.
that was also part of the turn, as I would read it. And then there was the Woodstock Festival and the musical Hair and all these things. And then the whole tragic side of it started to peep through. And by the end of the 60s, there was the terrible Charles Manson massacres that went on,
Oh, yeah.
and the big free rock and roll concert at Altamont, where someone was killed.
Killed,
And there
yeah.
was a lot of injuries, and apparently the management enlisted the help of the Hells Angels, the local chapter, for
Yeah.
security, for various complicated reasons. But it's almost like if you read an account of how all that happened, you can see that it was kind of ill-starred, as it were, right from the start. And so there came in a mood of absolutely massive disappointment. Absolutely huge. And you know, that's a feeling, an emotion, which most of us don't do very well with. It's very hard to receive and accept and really feel it through. And if it isn't felt through, it turns into a kind of militancy, which again is that's another face of Aries. But I'm so fascinated by how those link together and the emotional processes. If they're externalized, they can be absolutely disastrous, you know?
And just to add to everybody listening, Chiron's cycle is about 51 years. So,
Yes.
I think it's wonderful to have Melanie here to talk about the history of that last shift from Pisces into Aries. This one began in 2018, right, Melanie, when Chiron.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, back during the times of the First World War, Chiron was in Pisces through that whole war and went into Aries in 1919, for hotly followed by a pandemic, an influenza pandemic that is reputed to have killed more people than the entire World War One put together. More
Yeah,
people
I believe
dying.
it did. Yeah.
And so there's also, you know, that poignant reminder of the fact that it is sometimes through illness that trauma gets processed. Especially, as you know, back First World War, that was long before the term or the abbreviation PTSD. That didn't
Yeah.
even exist back then. there was just this condition vaguely called shell shock. And so lots and lots of extremely deeply traumatized people came back from the war. And then there was a pandemic. It kind of makes sense.
Kind of
And
feels like a bit, a little like our times.
exactly. And that second half of the 60s, of course, that was a particular phase in the benighted war in Vietnam.
Course.
And that was just a so the My Lai massacre was one of the most famous episodes that really started to turn the tide. And that was in 1968, so that was all part of that turning of the tide. But I do feel that this emotion of disappointment, which, Pisces was traditionally ruled by Jupiter, and since Neptune was discovered, I think of them as co-rulers, not one or the other,
I do too.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. And so this theme of disappointment seems to me to be really important to both, via both of the rulers, Jupiter and Neptune. And so how we handle our disappointment may make the difference between kind of holding a nameless pain that creates a situation where we're more likely to just project onto other people and then battle them, or direct hatred and judgment and everything else to them. But the tracking of disappointment means that we don't have to do that. And so that's almost like the Sabian symbol there, isn't it?
It is.
Or I've lost it in this maze of
Oh.
lost it.
Well, yeah, it talks about not only escape from the fatality of seasonal decay or
Yes,
deprivation, but
exactly.
yeah, but to assist other living entities to survive through crises, which of course Chiron's role really was as a teacher and mentor and healer and medicine man.
Exactly.
And through his own loss, he saved Prometheus, right? So, he kind
Yeah.
of, yeah, through his own disappointment and pain, he and sacrifice, if you like. So it's a very kind of sacrificial, but not in the way some of us these days think of sacrifice. It's kind
Yeah.
of just saying, my loss is your gain, if you like, so I can help you from what I've learned from my loss, if you like. So does that
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if one can feel that the difficult feelings around disappointment, it also short circuits the tendency to blame. So to blame another person for my suffering or for my misfortune, or also to blame myself, which can be equally hazardous, And also blame goes nowhere really, because it leads to more desire for punishment and all the rest of
It
it.
does.
But there's
But
a softening quality to
also
disappointment.
perhaps, or but also perhaps the tendency to think there's somebody else or something else going to save you, the
Yeah,
savior thing.
yes, of course they go together, don't they? Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on generally in modern day astrology, because since Uranus was discovered in 1781, we've realized that when these energies come into our human consciousness, we kind of the energy of them is more so. Both those periods you've looked at, we didn't know Chiron existed, right?
Exactly. And I do very much think of Chiron as the the bridge between the visible planets and the invisible planets. And you know, there's a way in which the processes which are represented by the outer planets are very rarely something which we can integrate directly at a personal level. Often the energies are more noticeable as they spin out into the collective. You know, in historical events of one kind or another. And almost invariably, what we see out there is the kind of upside down and backwards version of what's really going on. Because they are pretty high voltage energies, so to speak. And they are also energies which are meant to take us beyond our own sort of crystallized ego patterning. And so sometimes it can happen that they crash into that, and that is like a crisis.
Yes.
And it can take a very long time to integrate, because it's almost like we naturally go into fright and defensiveness because it's too much, it's overwhelming. And so, you know, enter Chiron.
Yes.
Chiron
in 1977, by the way. He was
yes, exactly.
Discovered by us.
Oh, and
November the 1st. Yeah.
This is a little Gemini digression here, if you don't mind.
No, my Gemini moon loves digressions.
Okay. Well, a little event happened earlier in the week that was so charming, and yet I had a feeling there was some kind of deeper meaning to it. And it was the following day that you emailed me to ask me if we could have a conversation about this week. So what happened was, I was on a Skype call with a friend, and for various reasons we were also exchanging messages in the chat. So she typed something for me in the chat. And the way that came through on the microphone, I thought, oh my God, it's like, I first thought, oh, it's like the hooves of horses on the keyboard. And she's a very fast, it's not like me, I'm pretty slow. And so I was sitting there sort of musing with delight about this sound of like a herd of horses.
Oh, lovely.
Going over the keyboard. And then I thought, oh, it's centaurs. And once we made that connection, well, we absolutely laughed, and we laughed, and we laughed so much. And so I was typing all kinds of things that I didn't really need to type, but just so that it was like the exchange between these horses on either side coming through the chat, you know.
Oh, I love that. I love
and
that.
It was so funny. We ended up just absolutely laughing and laughing. And it was a conversation that had started out, you know, on quite a serious tone. And by the end, we were just absolutely falling about, you know. And I went to bed thinking of the centaurs and thinking, I'm sure there's another meaning other than just this delightful comedic exchange that I had with a friend, you know. And then when I opened my computer in the morning, I saw the email from
my
you.
My email.
Oh, I knew there was something else. They were kind of making their horse music over Skype. And
I have to tell you, Melanie, over the recent months, really, since we last talked, and since I've been working more closely with the centaurs, and that happened really after my Caritlo return, and we'll talk about her in a minute, because because my Caritlo's each have a Caritlo return, which is Chiron's wife, around age 62, 63, and so when I had that, they really came online for me, the centaurs. But speaking of the horses, kind of that feels like they are in my brain most of the time. And the kind of the message I overall get from the centaurs and how they're working us since Chiron's discovery at the end of 77, And then Pholus was next, right, in 92. And that was the year as well that Chiron crossed it within the boundary of Saturn and came into our visible orbit, if you like. Anyway, and as each one's come online, it just seems like the healing that they are bringing is us getting in touch with our animal side. So centaurs are half human and half horse, so half animal and half really the higher kind of rational brain. And everything has been kind of flooding into me. So forgive me if it seems a bit Gemini moon scattered, but
No problem. From
everything
one
I,
to another.
yeah, everything I read, books, like not just astrology books. I actually entered therapy again because of something happened in my life, and I'm doing internal family systems therapy. I don't know if you've heard of it, parts work. Everything is all about descending down into our human side after centuries of thinking that everything was about our mind and everything was about rational, or everything was about I think, therefore I am, which is really the top half of the centaur. It's kind of like Chiron came in, into our consciousness. He was in Taurus at on the in the discovery chart, which I think of as the most earthly sign, the one that's connected with nature and animals and our interconnectedness as messy human bodies. I really think that's what we're being called to do in, with these centaurs.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. It's also interesting thinking about Chiron's movement is Chiron in 2021, in late May, was at a point in its orbit called the aphelion, which simply means that that was the time when Chiron was the furthest away from the sun. All planetary orbits are ellipses. It's like a flattened circle. Some very elliptical and some not so much. But this all the centaur's orbits are very elliptical. And so what that means is if we think of the sun as a constant, which of course in fact it's not, the whole thing is moving in space at this dizzying speed. I never remember the numbers because it
I
makes
don't
me sick
either,
even
but
think about it, But anyway, if we think of Chiron as moving further away from the sun, and then eventually kind of turning around and beginning the part of its orbit where it comes in much closer to the sun. So the sun does carry really important symbolism. Apollo was a sun god and the mentor of Chiron. So Chiron was raised by Apollo, who taught him all kinds of amazing skills, including the healing arts, And so there is this kind of indigenous energy in this in the centaurs that does relate to the centaur sign of the zodiac, which is Sagittarius, in the sense of future orientation, of seeking and going further and looking at the horizon, not the ground kind of thing. And that is both the gift of Sagittarius and also its vulnerability, because I think I put this into my book, but anyway, there's a poem of D.H. Lawrence where he speaks about it's only when you give up seeking that you will find. And to me, that's very Chiron, because
It's all here.
that drive to follow our energy out there and away and just out into the world, that can really intercept our capacity to be quietly with ourselves or with a situation anchored in our own heart, which of course is associated with the sun. via the sign of Leo. So
And
now, right.
incidentally, talking of the heart and the sign of Leo and the sun, I work with the Venus star point work as well. And the last Venus, well, the current Venus star that we're under was at 20 Leo,
Yes.
in a lovely supportive fire trine aspect to this eclipse where
To this
Chiron is now.
eclipse point. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So I like to imagine Chiron coming through the very end part of Pisces, and I think that's where the disappointment is so important. Coming through that and, continuing on and up and out to search and search and search. And it's at the perihelion point that direction changes. And from 2021, it's as if Chiron's orbit is drawing closer and closer in to the sun, which we can certainly take as a point of individual light. And so all the searching out there and putting one's energy out there turns around. That happened just a couple of years ago, and maybe many of you felt that. What I'm also very aware of is, particularly in the last decade, but not, it didn't suddenly spring out of nowhere, but there are numerous people now really working in the field of trauma and
Yes,
really.
I was about to mention, well, this is the internal family systems is excellent for
Absolutely.
trauma healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, there are many fine teachers now, in print and online, who are working with wisdom about that background,
Yes.
which, of course, does also spill into history and what happens in history. It's almost as if the wheel of history turns on the unprocessed trauma
Yes.
of the previous lot of people. And
But
there are many things one can say to contest that, but it's a very interesting way of looking at it. And certainly on an individual level, the means by which we can better process our own trauma is becoming available. And the awareness about that whole process
Definitely.
is very high now, out in the collective, which is amazing.
And I also, so yeah, there's Gabor Maté for one, Richard Schwartz, who
Yes.
created internal family systems. And incidentally, he said that came to him in a download, really, or series of downloads in the early 80s, just after Chiron's discovery. So, there's the influence of Chiron coming in again, kind of almost downloading this
Yeah,
these
absolutely.
new ways of healing and healing generational, multi-generational traumas as well.
Exactly. So, also to mention here the work of Daniel Foer, Dr. Daniel Foer. You can see from his marvelous book, Ancestral Medicine, if you look at the frontispiece, you'll see he was born in 1977.
Oh, he was.
He was. And I
Oh,
almost think of him as the voice of Chiron, because he's really
yeah.
working from such a kind of new but ancient cosmology or understanding of how these things all link together,
Yeah.
Very, I think I really do think of him as the voice of Chiron.
Definitely. And just I'm a trained shamanic practitioner amongst many of my other kind of things that I've studied and trained in and worked with. And the rise in people who are turning to understanding the shamanic practice. Just I don't mean they're becoming shamans.
Yes.
I don't mean everybody's, becoming a healer. It's more like we're becoming our own healers by learning to tune into that those kind of realms, that kind of more indigenous, as you said,
Yes.
realms.
Yes.
And that kind of brings me to Chiron's wife, how she's working with Charicla, how she's
Yes.
working with her husband.
Oh,
So,
something I can't wait to tell
yeah.
you.
Oh, no, you go on and that then. Yeah.
I only noticed this recently. So I was talking about the aphelion where Chiron was and the turning point and so forth. And so the perihelion is the opposite. Chiron is the closest into the sun. So that happened on the 14th of February, 1996. 1 year later, exactly,
Character.
Chariclo was
Yeah.
discovered. I nearly fell off my
Yeah.
chair when I saw that. Oh, wow. I can't
I've
believe
been
I didn't see that before.
searching for that date. But not only that, didn't before that, as Chiron was approaching that point, he crossed the orbit of Saturn at 6 degrees Leo, which was the discovery degree
Yes,
of his wife. Yes.
exactly.
So,
And
yeah.
then when Chiron came out of that visit to the inner side of Saturn, that was in early Sagittarius, and that's where the 1949 conjunctions of Chariclo and Chiron
Yes.
had occurred.
Yep.
It was just
It's
amazing kind of weaving, you know. But what came to my mind with this, the Chiron reaches perihelion, so makes the long journey from having all the energy going out there, and begins to draw that within as the orbit begins to get closer to the sun, and it's right where it's in the innermost point. That's when Chariclo comes into the picture. And I just thought, what a teaching that is, because so often, in many, many ways, but certainly in the ways of looking for relationship, is we have so many projections going out there, so many hopes, wishes, and ideals and things that where that mean all our energy is going out, so to speak. And it's almost like once that lands back in our own heart, the space opens where not just our one special relationship, but all our relationships kind of shift level when that starts to happen. And I just thought that was absolutely wonderful.
And speaking about kind of my own life journey a little bit with this journey of Chiron within to Saturn's orbit and in the early 90s, and then the discovery of his wife Chariclo by us with a beautiful balanced six-pointed star chart. We've talked about that on the last interview,
Yeah.
which I'll link to on this one, but there's so much we could say. In that period, I actually spent consciously chose to spend a few years single, celibate, on my own. I literally described it as finding myself.
Yes.
And I've long since said that if you do that, if you're healthy and happy and whole within yourself, you can be in healthier relationships with others. So it speaks to that finding that somebody else to complete you or save you. That's never going to happen. You can't be
Yeah.
in healthy relationships unless you are help in a good relationship with yourself. So, my own life journey, kind of time-wise, actually aligns with that.
Yes, and I'm sure you've probably experienced this too, is talking to many people, you know, for readings and things like that, where it's like the soul is prompting them to have a period of solitude and even celibacy sometimes. But, you know, other aspects of them are kind of fighting this because it's not really socially acceptable to do that.
No, it's not.
Because often, you know, the world sees things in terms of successful couples or failed couples,
I know.
but not in terms of singletons, you know, to use an
Yeah.
astrological word. And what I've noticed is that people are accepting this more and more now.
Yeah.
And that
But
helps people to accept it in themselves, of course, you know.
I've also found you can do it even if you're in a relationship. You know, in a couple, I've now been married
Right.
27 years with my, we're on a, our relationship Saturn return. And we went
Wonderful.
through a rocky patch because various reasons I don't need to go into. And instead of focusing on going out there and kind of having a mediator kind of make us thrash out things, I just focused on my own healing and things turned around. It's just,
Yeah.
you know, I became happier in myself again, and the relationship is fine now. So anyway, so I'm a terrible astrologer in many ways. I kind of tell people, I say, don't ask me about the other person. I said, it's all in you.
Exactly.
I don't look at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of think astrology, at least the counseling kind of astrology that I practice, is moving more to just focusing on that person, finding the self in the middle of the chart, if you
Yeah.
like, which is very centauric to my mind as well. So,
Yes, it is.
yeah.
Because also, you know, get given a chance, most people will speak their Chiron. So
Yes.
you don't have to figure out what this particular individual Chiron is about.
No.
But being given that space, people will very often just speak from that place.
So let's go back to Caraclo a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, since their conjunction, before we knew they existed, and that was in 1949, as you said, was that in Sagittarius? I can't remember where the
Yes, it
conjunction was.
was in early Sagittarius, and there were three of those conjunctions that pretty much dominated 1949.
Which doesn't surprise me with my Sagittarius stellium that they speak to me as a pair. But
Yes.
anyway, but since 1994, 95, the two have been really in a sextile, pretty much, kind of
Yes.
waning, which a sextile is a 60-degree aspect, by the way. So that it was exact in 94 and 95 and is going to come back to several exact 60-degree aspects from 2028 to 2033, I think. So they've really been in this very supportive dance with each other because the
Yes.
60-degree aspect is a supportive aspect. But
Yes, and
Carol,
of course it
yeah.
absolutely features on the chart for her discovery.
It does. It's
The
in
whole
there.
trail of 60-degree aspects all the way around the chart, and it's sort of complete. It's a complete hexagram, you know.
It's beautiful. Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. But I'm not going to show it again. I know I'd be tempted to, but we'll get lost.
Yes.
But Caraclo is in Aquarius and has been in Aquarius for quite a while. And I can't remember when she moved in. Do you remember?
Don't remember
No.
exactly.
No, I can look it up while I talk. But I've heard you mention it, and I've often kind of thought it myself as well. Caraclo is this spinner of grace. She's the space holder. I always see her as the weaver and spinner of new stories, and or
Yeah.
spinning the threads of the old stories to create something new, like a big rug. And Aquarius is a sign. We're moving into the age of Aquarius. Most people know that. And I always think of her as kind of just sitting there spinning these old indigenous ways into a new way to move forward in a very futuristic way, because we can't go back. We're not going to go, back to the old days or kind of things like that. So we kind of have to, are being called in Aquarius to really kind of create a very different way. We're being given this opportunity. So she moved in 2021, by the way, into Aquarius. So we're in the sign of the water bearer, and she's holding space. And here we have Chiron in Aries, which is really that little girl, the I am kind of energy as well, that very clear new beginning. And the two are working together, in my opinion, to kind of help us really fully move into this new paradigm we're moving into. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, Chiron was discovered physically when it was in between Saturn and Uranus. So, as Louise mentioned, Chiron does go through the orbit of Saturn, and so for about 20% of its orbit, oh no, I'm not sure of that figure now, but anyway, it spends part of its orbit in between Saturn and Jupiter. So technically sort of an inner planet, and then it goes to be an outer planet between Saturn and Uranus. So Saturn is the edge of the visible world, and Uranus is the edge of the invisible world. So Uranus was the first planet to be discovered with maths and technology, not just from the visual sight. So that's an enormous edge between two completely different perceptions of the world or knowledge of the world. And the old ruler of Aquarius was Saturn. And when Uranus was discovered, as Louise mentioned, in 1781, it was attributed by some astrologers to Aquarius. Me, I like to think of it as a both and. I don't think that Uranus replaced Saturn at all. I think the dialectic between them is what's obvious in the sign of Aquarius. And that dialectic can be pretty rough, actually, because Uranus is an energy that seeks to release bound energy. And that often, what's that phrase? Yeah, to make an omelet, you've got to break the eggs. It's all right if you're the omelet, but what about if you're the egg? No, help. So, in other words, the action of Uranus does tend to activate our fear and defenses, which is the Saturn side of things. So to me, the energy of Chariclo in Aquarius, it opens ways of being where we're not just ping-ponging between these radical opposites. Now, Chiron goes through the orbit of Saturn, and to me, that's very much an indication of, bringing our Saturnian defenses, fears, rigidities, all those things, bringing those into the healing field. Because without that, Uranus would just be this dizzying leap into the new paradigms, new this, new that, new clothes, new boyfriend.
Saturn is the steady hand saying, "Hold on."
Exactly. Saturn says, wait a minute. He's also the lord of time. So Uranus operates not in the world of time, which is part of the real crash that can happen with Uranus when we get carried away by an idea and an ideology. So the idealism, the vision of the future, and so forth. And
Like maybe getting too carried away with the AI thing, maybe, for example,
oh
that's
yes. Oh, and not only that, I keep every time I listen to anything political on the radio,
Oh.
And I do
Yeah.
limit that because otherwise the world seems so mad. I think, no, wait a minute,
I
this,
know.
I can't be hearing what I'm hearing, you know. But, you know, what mostly, I'm going to say mostly well-meaning, but maybe some not, sort of visionary politicians, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to, you know, the interest rate is going to fall and everybody's income is going to rise. And it's just this storm of ideas which are no more than that. It's their ideas. And, you know, then.
Whereas Saturn's kind of saying there's something to be said for keeping some of the old traditional ways and wait,
Exactly. So, you know, the middle ground between those two is often very elusive. In my mind, if I think of Chiron as being very important in that space, so often, either to get all cramped up and defensive or to be overeager and leap into the future, they're both defenses against things that are painful within us that need attention. And that's where Chiron comes in. And also, Chariclo moves between Saturn and Uranus, but she doesn't cross over either of them. So it's like her space is in that medium space
She
between them.
pulls the two together, kind of.
Exactly. And she is in that space where neither of those two dominate. And so in Aquarius, I think her action, so to speak, is very strong and sometimes very obvious. And it's as if there's an empty space that we need to find in between those two. Often they cannot be reconciled and tied up in a neat little bundle and understood
No,
because they
that's
are
not.
irreconcilable opposites, and we have to be able to accept that. And the space that can open, as regards Chariclo, is something that may be very, very small, very quiet, very personal, but that has this encompassing kind of energy. And it can be very still. And still doesn't mean that you don't do anything. It means that
Exactly.
the space out of which you do things has this particular sense of clarity, you know. I also have seen Chariclo, the graceful spinner image. I've seen her work in transits by being an energy that actually unspins where things are all knotted up. And initially, that can feel quite dramatic. But again, there's an invitation to be quiet and allow the inner process to do its own thing. You know, we don't have to do it all, you know. And so that's something about how I feel this energy. And I think, you know, with them sextile, that's so interesting because,
And they've just been working together for so long. But you know, it's interesting that after we speak and after this eclipse that's on April the 8th, it's only 4 years till they start exact sextiling again to each other and really start to kick in. But I want to mention to you another thing that I've been looking at and working with is the 6 degree Aquarius mark. So 6 degrees Aquarius is opposing the degree that Chariclo was discovered at six Leo, and it's the south node of the USA chart. Now, I'm not going to get political, but I am going to say, you know, clearly, you know, this eclipse is right over the USA. It's the third solar eclipse, sorry, since 2017 to go right through the USA, and that's it till the 2040s. No more total eclipses over the USA. And clearly, the USA is kind of the fulcrum point of some of the global turmoil that's happened politically and energetically. You know, people have split, families have split since all this turmoil, all this separation since the pandemic. So it's just obvious. Well, I kind of think like this eclipse is going to change things. But this began with this six Aquarius point, and I'm just going to show you my slide, Melanie. And I keep finding
I'd love
more
to see
points.
it. Now,
I keep
there was a conjunction of Nessus and Chiron
Oh, see, I didn't know about that one.
at that degree.
At six Aquarius, I'll find where that one was.
It was
But to show everybody else as well, though. When Uranus, the modern ruler of Aquarius, was discovered,
Oh, look at that.
Pluto was at the sixth Aquarius. Pluto will return to that point in February of 2027.
Wow.
So then we've had all these other conjunctions at six or seven. I put some things together. And then this is where Chiron crossed Saturn's orbit in
Oh, that's absolutely
1992.
wonderful. Wonderful.
I know. I mean, I'm just like blown away. But looking forward, well, this year we just had a Venus Mars conjunction at six Aquarius too. And then we've got the Pluto return to six Aquarius in 2027. And then in 2028, when Chariclo and Chiron start sextiling exactly again, we've got a series of conjunctions at 6 and 7 degrees Aquarius again.
Wow.
I'm just like
Absolutely wonderful.
So it was Nessus and Chiron, you said, were
Yes, I'm not sure if it was exactly 6 degrees, but I think so.
But
Also,
close.
1954-ish, that was a conjunction of Pholus and Chiron in Aquarius.
Oh,
And I
well,
think
I'll have to
around the
look at
same degree,
those.
it would be worth checking.
Yeah, I'll look into those. But I just want people, I don't want everybody to get tied up too much in the USA and things. But it has been the leader of the free world. The USA had the doctrine of discovery, so and manifest destiny, and all of this kind of conquering out there, kind of colonizing kind of energy. And that's all being changed and wound back. The whole energy of the USA is going to have to change it. Well, we can see it happening. And of course, we've had our Pluto return just because I live here now. And I just almost think like it's a new birth for the United States in some way, whether I don't know what's going to look like, but I do think it's being reborn, and it had to go through all this chaos to be reborn, to be more human and caring and loving, to go back to that Sabian symbol that we've got on this last eclipse as well, because it has been rather conquering and domineering as a culture overall. Not to say there has not been good things about the USA. I am not anti-USA. I love living here. It's a great country. But also, to even think of when the country was formed, there was manifest destiny, which incidentally was coined as Neptune was discovered, of kind of this conquering light coming in and conquering the darkness. And that brings me back to the centaurs being half light, half dark, if you like, half human,
Absolutely.
half animal.
And in a way, what you've just said about the USA and its origins, because its origins are really close to when Uranus was discovered. So what you've described is almost like an example of when we were talking about the orbit of Chiron, and the how the attempt to leave the past behind in one fell swoop or whatever doesn't really work
And
because
ignoring what was there already as well.
exactly and continually driving forward in such a way that everything that's behind or lying outside that vision is demonized in one way or another, you know.
Yeah.
So it creates a whole big split. It doesn't necessarily integrate or heal anything. So that's the calling at the moment, as I see it. And then also, you know, the tendency of any colonial power actually to feel a sense of righteousness, which is part of the drive to keep going and stay true to the vision and all that. And how that whole kind of meta narrative has to be dismantled in one way or another. And I think that we're in a period of dismantling, major, major, major.
Oh, we are.
We also
yeah, and it's reflected out everywhere, of course, and in us everywhere. Yeah. It's not just.
And we don't really know how long it's going to go on, because we're referring to some very big cycles.
Oh, we are. You know, this. If we stick with the centaurs, Caraclo and Chiron do not have their first square right till 2041. I think there's only one there. So, and so, you know, and of course they're not the only planetary bodies or centaurs that are bringing in this healing process. But I do think you know, even looking at all the other energies, which I won't go into all of them, but looking at the Venus star point cycle and all of those things where we're going, I do think, you know, by probably about the early 2040s, things will start to settle down a little bit, and we'll see where at least it's going. That's how it feels to me anyway.
Yeah, I think that sort of sense of direction is something really important, but I think, you know, it's a bit hazardous once we start trying to pin down what that actually is.
Because
that can't be done prematurely. And, you know, actually, you know, next weekend I'm doing a presentation which I gave it as a title, Are We There Yet? And of course,
we're never there.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was specifically a reference to the age of Aquarius, because ever since the late 60s and the musical Hair, I mean, everybody back then was talking about the age of Aquarius and pinpointing various dates, and that continues on. But in Nick Campion's marvelous book called The Book of World Horoscopes, there's a whole chapter on the age of Aquarius. Don't know if you've ever seen that, but what is so astounding, it gives a long list, it's pages and pages, of all the kind of worthies in the astrological field who have predicted the date on which
Are we there
the
yet?
age of Aquarius is going to fall, you know. And the total span of all the, and, you know, it's got the names and the astrological rationale and the source and everything, very scholarly. And the total range, which he quotes, it's 1,500 years. It's not like, well, maybe this month or next month or a couple of years down. It's 1,500 years. And then I've also done some research further back than his earliest date. And it's so interesting. You know, I think the whole meme of, you know, when it's going to start is a bit suspect in a way.
I agree. It kind of fades in and fades out.
But what I do think, though, is that the energies of Aquarius that we've been referring to in one way or another, given that for decades now, there's always been at least one of the outer planets or a centaur or two in Aquarius. And so we've been, you know, getting bathed from the water bearers, you know, like washing those energies over us for decades already.
And I'm just going to share an image with you, Melanie. And I have to thank Naomi Bennett for this. I think it's Naomi Bennett. Do you know her, the astrologer?
No, I don't.
No. Anyway, she's another astrologer. She pointed out that on our sky map, this is, one of those apps. I've got Star Walk app. If you point your app at the eastern horizon every morning now, this is always what's rising. The Aquarius is always rising in the east, no matter where you are at dawn. I don't know when it ha started to, because it will have changed over time. But there's the constellation, not the sign, because signs and constellations are different. I know Melanie knows that. I'm not telling the listeners. But there's the water bearer rising in the east now. So I think the age of Aquarius kind of is dawning, the constellation. But I had a thought when I looked at this image, connected with the centaurs, of course, is that the water bearer, water is life, as they say, the indigenous peoples. And even though, a lot of astrologers say we're moving into this age of air, and we're moving into, this age of exploration of outer space and colonization and things, the water bearer is pouring this down to earth, like the centaurs are going, no, you've got to bring it down to earth again. That was my thought with that image
Oh,
anyway.
lovely, lovely.
So I'll stop the share, but I was just like, that I now I know why it's the water bearer.
Yeah.
It kind of never made sense in a way,
And also, Aquarius is a fixed sign, so-called.
Yes, yeah.
And it's an air sign. And, air has a lot to do with communication. Well, perception and language and thought and thinking and all related fields,
Yeah.
and it's a fixed sign. So there we're what we're looking at really are the fixed ideas
Yes.
which run our
Yes.
lives. And
Yes.
sometimes it's easy to look out in the world and see the fixed ideas in all their horrible glory
Oh,
and
yes.
what the consequences are when people hang on to fixed ideas and so forth. But it's not so easy to see into and really get a sense of the fixed ideas that we have lodged in our own minds.
Oh,
Because
exactly.
some of them were put there before we could even speak.
Oh,
So it's our conditioning.
It
That,
is.
in a way, is the Saturn part of Aquarius. It's our assumptions and our views and opinions and all of that, which are based on beliefs that may be completely unconscious.
And
So,
their beliefs that have often held us back, limiting beliefs,
absolutely.
self-limiting beliefs. Yeah.
So to sort of jump ship a bit here, but not quite, I believe that this is one of the gifts of Pluto in Aquarius. Whatever else it might bring on the historical, political world stage, inside our own hearts and minds, this is a real opportunity to really see who, like who runs the show in here.
Yes, and it's also to talk about that mind and the water bearer thing. It's about integrating that knowing and the rational thought.
Yeah,
It's
absolutely. It's almost like the water bearer aspect of that image comes into play almost when you've reached the end of your own understanding and you can't go any more in the same circuit that you've been in maybe all your life without even realizing it. And then somehow this bringing in the element of water sort of opens up a completely different kind of space, which has a different kind of knowing in it.
It does.
It's not knowing by fixed ideas or beliefs or anything like that. It's the knowing of the heart, And,
Amazing.
in the sequence of the zodiac, of course, the next sign along is Pisces. And that's almost like the bridge is that the jug of water, Oh, and by the way, there's a most amazing image of a female water bearer. that can be found. It was the original poster for what became the Woodstock Festival.
Oh, I
Absolutely
think I've seen
gorgeous.
it somewhere.
Yes.
Maybe I'll find that image for their Woodstock and put that as the thumbnail on YouTube for this video when I upload it. So I'll find that image of the and put it on that thing. So we've gone. Whew, I knew we'd go ages, Melanie, as we always do. But before we wrap up, to just circle back to where we began, this eclipse with Chiron being exactly conjunct. If you could kind of just sum up how you feel Chiron's role is in this Aries eclipse, after looking at the symbols and all of that, and with Aries being the first sign and all the things we've said about it. Oh, and incidentally, on the eclipse, Mars will be in Pisces by then. So Mars is softened as well, which I like, the ruler
Yes.
of
Yes.
Aries. What do you think Chiron's role is in this eclipse?
Well, from what I've seen, Chiron being so close to the nodal axis, so it was exactly conjunct the nodal axis, depending on which kind of node you use, but it was on the 5th of this month, so March 2024. And actually, if you look at that conjunction over a longer period, you'll see that really the whole of the first 6 months of this year have Chiron conjunct the nodal axis. So what I've been noticing is that people are coming across healing teachings, healing people, mentors, or just simply healing experiences in a wonderful kind of serendipitous way, a lot.
Oh, I agree.
A lot. So it's more than what one could expect if somebody had that on their natal chart as a transit. This is a collective transit, you know. So there is a lot of healing energy around. And also, I think with Chiron, the whole notion of healing very much needs to include our mortality. That's the story of Chiron. He only became freed when he traded places with Prometheus, and that was like a gesture of accepting his mortality, which he wasn't free to do before. And what that looks like in real terms is that, all of us are going to die at some point or another. And as I've heard from Buddhist teachers, there's only two things in life that we can be sure about. One is that we will die, and two is that we don't know when. And so healing in a Chiron way is also about becoming free of the kind of mental tyranny about what healing looks like. It's not about fixing what is broken. It's a whole other process that includes our mortality. And the whole way that Western medicine has developed is very much along the heroic lines, battling the disease, fighting against the disease. It's in the language,
It is fight
but that's
cancer.
something else. Yes. But this is something else. And here I'm thinking of the marvelous work of Stephen Levine, who sadly died a few years back, where and the title of the book that comes to mind is Healing into Life and Death. So he describes how somebody can be fixed medically and completely unhealed in their soul, and vice versa. Even if we die of our disease, we can die completely healed in our soul. And I'm finding that, many of us may have begun by having those two mixed up. And so
Definitely.
expecting that healing is going to be about fixing what's wrong, or it's going to cure something so it won't bother me anymore. And even worse, And if that doesn't happen, somehow I have failed.
Yes, I know.
We do have some of the most punishing ideas
Oh, and
about what healing is. So this,
about continuing life at any cost as well, you know.
yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's almost a distortion of the fact, well, there is continuity of life.
Yes.
People, this endless discussion about is there life after death and all that. Well, the subtlety of the fact that, well, yes, of course there is life after death, but we won't be in the same body that we've inhabited this time
Exactly.
round, so to speak. And so
Yeah.
it's like a broadening of the view about those th crucial themes to do with healing.
Yeah.
And I've seen so much of this going on.
There's another author you might like, if you've not come across him, Stephen Jenkinson. I've actually seen him talk, giving a talk live. He wrote a most amazing book, and I like it on Audible because his voice is lovely. Stephen Jenkinson, Die Wise. He was in the death business, he says. He was a, you know, a, you know, help people, you know, die, and he just saw, you know, he said, you know, we need to come to terms with the fact that part of being human is death, and you can choose to die wise, or you can choose otherwise, he said. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
the quest for our immortality is so much of what I would call progressism.
Yes.
Has dominated
Oh, it is. It
world
has.
culture for
Yeah.
centuries now.
Yeah.
And, that I think is beginning to get dismantled.
Thank
So
heavens.
all these changes of view belong with Chiron conjunct the node and the sextiles
Yeah.
with Chariclo. Now, the eclipse, all eclipses, both lunar and solar, they are markers of endings.
Yes.
And the endings that they're referring to would be very individual, of course, depending on where they sit in your chart and what kind of aspects and all that. But, if one tunes in to the energy of an eclipse, it's usually very obvious. And it can range from something that's very subtle and invisible, so that you're the only one who knows that there's been an ending. It could be a subtle shift of perspective, a shift within a relationship where you know that a phase has ended. That doesn't mean that the relationship has ended necessarily. So all
No.
these really subtle things that become more available to us around eclipse times. So very enriching. And sometimes the eclipses are, they mark really dramatic endings, things that are really in your face. Sometimes that come completely out of left field and you had no idea about that. It just occurs.
Yeah.
So on an individual level, those kind of eclipse experiences will usually occur only when an eclipse is sitting exactly on one of your planets or in a very tight
Yeah.
aspect to something else. And that, it will need to be a really close, tight aspect, and then you can really see that kind of manifestation. So the rule of thumb there is the closer an eclipse falls onto one of your own planetary placements, the more obvious its manifestations might be. But even with an orb of about 5 degrees either side, you'll feel it maybe more consciously and so forth. But
Well, I
the way I like to approach eclipse times is to just leave space for whatever the process is going to be for you in your own individual life. And it can be very deepening and enriching.
Well, I can tell you it's been often we feel eclipses as they come close as well. And not only is this eclipse combined with my third pass of my exact second Uranus square, this eclipse forms a very tight fire grand trine with my Uranus in Leo and my Sagittarius sun. And the kind of profound, almost burning off, I would say, of some very old stuff
A beautiful
all
phrase, yeah.
has already been happening for me. And
Well,
I look forward to more of it kind of dissipate. I feel it literally, Melanie. I've actually also kind of shed 2 jean sizes, and I'm not really
oh,
dieting. I'm not
well,
really dieting.
so you're.
I feel like I'm being reborn almost,
Well, so it's very literal in that way. You're burning
Yes.
off.
Yeah, and I'm not
Well, you
really
know,
trying.
so in a couple of days on March the 25th, we'll be
The
the
lunar
final,
eclipse.
which will be this time round a lunar eclipse. And so we are actually, as I would understand it, we are already in the eclipse season. Typically, there's one solar and one lunar eclipse, and they will be on a new moon and a full moon, respectively, so 2 weeks apart. And so an eclipse season is how I usually think of it. And I sort of count it just for convenience, a week before the first eclipse in the pair and a week after the second one. So it's actually a month. It can even be that there's more than one of the solar or lunar eclipses, which really stretches out. And typically those are years when a lot of stuff happens and not all of it is easy. Like there was one of them in the middle of the pandemic. There were six eclipses that year, I think. Certainly five, maybe six. So what that means is that twice a year, every year, there's a month. So 6 months apart, there's a month which is strongly colored by the eclipses that are going on. And they won't always be the same because it depends on an individual horoscope. But that's the way I like to approach them.
I
And so
do. I
I like
call
to
it
be
like the
mindful.
season too.
Sorry?
I call it the season too, or the
Perfect word. Yeah, the eclipse season. And I even try to be mindful of that in terms of what I schedule and what I don't. You know, so I like to try and schedule things in such a way that I open up enough space and time for the inner space to be recognized, well, cultivated, recognized, etc. And so for many of us, that will mean doing less.
Yes, I definitely agree. I do a lot less during eclipses. I leave a lot
Yeah.
of space for my own kind of, especially when the eclipses are really aspecting my chart, as both of them are actually. But I do want to mention this lunar eclipse is at 5 Libra Aries, because it's a full moon, and that's where Mars and Saturn sat on Chariclo's discovery chart.
Oh, that's right. Wow. Wow. Wow, that's wonderful.
Isn't it? I really think, the old, as you called it, the old culture, well, we've talked about it, the patriarchal, whatever you want to call it, is ending over time. But it's kind of all coming to the surface to be ended
Yeah.
though.
So I guess maybe a good phrase for a solar eclipse would maybe be happy endings.
I
Like
like
the sense of
that.
happy birthday, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely feel it. I feel nothing but, and I'm not saying there's not going to be chaos and more, stuff, but like Melanie said, you just don't sit in the news, don't sit in the horrors of what's going on. Doesn't mean don't be aware of what's going on, But a lot of this stuff is coming up, I think, so that we can change. Even the Middle East, that's an ancient battle, if you like, being replayed again. And it's awful. And yes, I'm, ceasefire, please. But energetically, a lot of this is rising up again, kind of to change and shift, I think. Personally. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Melanie. I know it's getting late for you. It's probably your dinner time and things, but
Thank you, Louise. As always, lovely to just chat with you.
it is with you. That's how it feels. I know everybody's listening, but I'm sure we'll do it again as well as we
Hope
get
so.
more ideas. Okay, well, I'm going to stop recording and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Bye, and thank you, everybody.